Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Randy Smith, and I'm your host today. And I am really excited to be chatting with a friend, Pascal Wagner. Pascal and I met through a mastermind that we're both a part of, and I've just grown to really like the guy over the last 6 to 9 months or so. So Pascal is the founder and CEO of Grow Your Cashflow. He has deployed over $150 million from a prior employer, and he is currently earning over $265,000 a year as a passive investor in investments. So, Pascal, welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Thanks, Randy. I'm really excited to dive in and have some fun with you here today.
Outstanding. Well, let's jump in. Like, tell us a little bit about yourself, some background. How did you go from where you were to where you are today?
Yeah, cool. I love it. So, you know, I think it's important to start my story with back in 2019, I started working as a fund manager at a company called Techstars, which is an early stage venture capital firm, where we would just make investments. We'd usually be one of the first checks in companies, giving them $100,000 to $300,000. I'd previously sold a company back in 2019, that was my last venture-backed startup, to a national photography firm. Reached out to one of the investors that was on my cap table, or that was an investor in the company, and said, "Hey, you know, I'd love to work in venture capital. Do you have a spot for me?" So they ended up making up a spot. It was a role that they couldn't hire for the previous year, and they brought me in, and that's how my journey and kind of big money investing started.
Are you interested in real estate investing but don't know where to get started, or think you don't have the time or money? Are you stuck in your W-2 because the golden handcuffs make it hard to walk away? If this sounds like you, check out impactequity.net and schedule some time to talk with the founder, Randy Smith. Randy went from massive income to leaving his W-2 through passive income, and he can help you do the same. www.impactequity.net.
Do you mind if I jump into that a little bit?
Let's dive right in. Yeah.
Yeah. So Techstars, they are, is this kind of like Shark Tank? You know, you got folks coming in, they're pitching the company, trying to get investments up to a few hundred grand. Is that kind of what's
going
on?
Yeah. I mean, so the way Techstars works is, it's, if you're familiar with Y Combinator or 500 Startups, they're all accelerator programs where the idea is, you know, tons of companies from all around the world are submitting applications. It's actually harder to get into Techstars than it is to get into Harvard. There was like a 0.3% acceptance rate of companies who applied to people who get money.
Okay.
And, you know, there's 15,000 that apply, and that gets whittled down to, you know, a couple hundred that we invest in. And those companies then have, we give them $120,000, and they would get into our program for 3 months, and they would get mentorship and coaching, and we'd teach them how to run their company, and we teach them how to frame their offering and pitch investors and get feedback. And ultimately, you know, the big, I guess, deal that Techstars has is 60% of companies go on to go raise over $1 million within a year after graduating the program. So it's a big accelerator to help companies grow.
So now, were you part of the group that's choosing which ones move forward, or the due diligence, or what was your role in that organization?
Yeah. So, so I did a lot of that, what you're talking about. But specifically, my role was on the investment team, where we focused on managing the follow-on fund. So if you think about the world of venture capital, you know, the first check-in is what Techstars did. These are like pre-seed checks and to get the company, you know, enough capital to get to their next milestone, to where they have some like real revenue that they can go raise from. And you know, how it would happen is there are a lot of these managing directors that would put together screening committees, you know, where we would sit in a room with 10 people and we would, the companies, the top 30 companies would pitch and we would talk about what were the pros and cons of each investment. How did we like the team? Like, how do we, how big do we think the market is?
Sure.
And so I would help with those. And then my role was to then figure out of all of the, you know, 2,500 plus companies that exist within the Techstars portfolio, which ones should we double down on and make those investments into? So that was my specific role.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Very, very interesting. What a neat role that's really kind of set you up for what you're doing today, obviously with your own personal investments and then fund management too. So interesting. Okay. So you spent a handful of years at Techstars and got just great experience. And I'm guessing at some point you start looking into investing passively yourself. Otherwise we likely wouldn't be here today. So tell me about that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So look, I think at the time I was working at a full-time job at Techstars being a fund manager. And, you know, I'd also built up a small real estate portfolio. I've been doing co-living where I buy single family homes and I rent them by the room. And I have 12 of those now in Atlanta. So that's kind of my active portfolio of real estate that I quote unquote manage or own.
Sure.
And, you know, I took on investors to fund buying some of those homes. So that was kind of like my first foray into, you know, raising money for real estate projects. I'd previously raised over $2 million for my last venture-backed startup and, you know, had experience raising money and being a steward of capital. Mm-hmm. And then in 2019, I took on $200,000 of investor capital to go buy some additional real estate. And really what happened was, you know, I had this friend, his name was Mike Klein, who is an incredible crypto expert and now fund manager, who we would hang out regularly. And he would be the person that's buying when markets are low. He was constantly telling me about different way, like where I should be placing my money. And sure. You know, I'm sitting there without, you know, managing both a full-time job and, you know, this active real estate portfolio and wanting to be involved in, sure. You know, figuring out where to invest my money in crypto. And, you know, after, you know, maybe like 2 years of just watching how much better Mike was able to have his portfolio grow than myself, sure. That's when I started having someone else manage money on my behalf. So that was kind of like the spark, right? It was the, you know, it wasn't officially investing in a fund, but it was investing with other people and having them manage it. I'd done that as well with hard money loans before. You know, I take some money and I give that to someone and then they pay me interest payments and give it back. Mm-hmm. And I would say then the real, you know, I'd continue investing like that where Mike was managing my crypto money and I was managing my job and my co-living portfolio. But then in 2021, everything changed. My dad passed away from old age, RIP dad. But, you know, at that point, I became the money manager of the family. My mom, you know, my dad managed all the finances for the family. And my mom really today still doesn't know how to, you know, where to place money or, you know, how much is she spending and how much is she bringing in? She doesn't really know any of that because my dad handled it. So all of a sudden, you know, in April of 2021, I now was tasked with like helping my mom find a new place to live. And, you know, on top of working this job and having my co-living portfolio. And the first thing that I did was I needed to figure out how to provide her an income. And so I took the part of the inheritance that my dad had left her and putting it into things that I knew personally would generate cash flow. And so for me, that was investing it in single family homes rented by the room.
Sure. Okay.
And after about a year, I had gotten to 12 homes and generating like $40,000 a month. And I started to realize, how incredibly risky it would be to keep putting more and more money into that. And, you know, if anything goes sideways, this is my mom's, you know, life, her retirement on the line, everything. And that's when I realized, like, I need to go diversify this and put it with someone else. And having had those experiences where I worked with Mike and managing my money and working with hard money lenders, and, you know, I needed a way to invest the money without pulling my hair out and diversifying it. And, you know, after having, you know, months long of sessions with my coach of giving up the control of managing it, I've totally switched the way that I think about it. You know, I was surrounded by people within GoBundance, the mastermind group that we're both a part of, where everyone there talks about investing for horizontal or passive income. And they talk about the number of income streams that they have. And I think that really opened up my eyes. And you would see some of these, the elders in GoBundance, they would have 30, 40, 50 different income streams from different projects. And to have that kind of diversification when you're living off of the income, I've found has been insanely important, especially when you have ups and downs in the cycle. So that's really how I got into passive investing. I was almost forced and just realized that I couldn't continue to do just this one asset class and that I needed to expand.
It's such a great story. And I think, like, your aha moment of one, that diversification scare that you ran into with your mom's money, like, that's scary. If all of a sudden you wake up and you've got 100% exposure to any one of anything, nothing is a sure bet, no matter how good you are, no matter how great the market is going. We've seen in recent years and months that is not always a good thing to do. So I think that was important. I think also, you know, your story about your friend Mike, like, what a great aha moment to realize that, you know, your superpower was probably focusing on something other than crypto, and you identified an expert. So let's leverage his expertise, and then you go leverage what your expertise is. So I think those are two great lessons.
So, like, it's crazy because I, you know, when I put two and two together, I realized I was working at a fund. Like, there are other wealthy investors who've given Techstars money to go manage and deploy that money on their behalf. And it, and then, you know, once you have that lens, and especially sitting there in the driver's seat, it's like, who do you think is going to do a better job? You know, the person that's doing this for the first time and they're trying to pick, you know, one or two startups that they think are going to be the ultimate success, or Techstars, who's looking at thousands of applications and has been doing this for over a decade, and, you know, has a track record, and they're, you know, and they have all those learnings over time. And I think that's also when you look at the writing on the wall of how the really high net worth investors invest, is they have their money deployed across all different types of fund managers. They might have an active real estate portfolio, but they are 100% diversified in all of these different. There's no way you can be an expert in all of these different asset classes.
No way. But I think you can become an expert at vetting operators and then sifting through those deals. And we're going to get into that, I know, because that's really kind of your strength and forte and superpower today. But you have these aha moments, and then all of a sudden you're forced with this challenge of, I've got to diversify this money. So, like, how do you do that? Like, how did you go out there and try to give your mom and then ultimately yourself diversification? Did you just start searching Google or hanging out with guys that were doing the same? Or what did that look like?
Yeah. So, look, one of the first problems that I had as an investor coming from the world of Techstars, where my whole role was to, you know, the Techstars follow-on fund at Techstars didn't have deal flow. If you think about it, they have 2,500 companies in their within the Techstars network that have received money from Techstars. But the follow-on fund investment team had no insight into what companies were raising rounds within their own portfolio. And so my job was to go out and figure out how to get that information and pull it in so that I knew what opportunities were even available for us to invest in. So taking that lens, I approached the same thing to passive investing. I had the same problem that anyone who gets into passive investing has, which is how do I find deals or how do I get deal flow? I'm a huge advocate for when you, in order to be a great investor, you need to see a lot of deals. You know, when I imagine you have this too, where it's like, you know, when you first started, if you only get a deal in your inbox every other month, then you really look at it and you're like, oh, this could be good. And like, or you might be asking yourself, how do I know if this is good? And it's, but if you're looking at 10 deals a week, you know, then you're seeing 500 deals in a year. And like, you're very quickly going to know what's market, what's not. Oh, this person's charging way more fees than 80% of all the other deals that I've seen. So my first objective was to figure out how to build up my deal flow. And that's how I started building this database of deals that, you know, all of the investors who subscribe on my list, you know, see. It's, I am signing up. When I'm on Facebook, I'm signing up for every single syndicator's email. You know, I am, if someone's saying, hey, I've heard of this deal, I'm like, can you send it to me?
Sure.
I go to that operator and I say, hey, what other deals are you in? I'll go to other investors or these investor communities like we have within GoBundance, and I'm asking them, you know, what deals are you invested into? What do you like? What have you looked at? It's really something where when you are in this space and if you become an investor, the number, I think the first thing that you need to do is to raise your flag up in the air and say, hey guys, I'm looking for deals. If you have a deal, I want to see it. How have you seen that play out?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of the same way. Like when I first got started, I was the podcast guy. So I was listening to, you know, 10 hours of podcast a day. I don't know where I found the time to do it. But then I would get on the phone with these guys too. And at first, I remember being a little starstruck, like, gosh, I'm talking to so-and-so who's on this podcast. And then I'd get his deal and I'd think, wow, this is the greatest deal I've ever seen, until I got on the next one and saw the next one. And as you said, before you know it, after you've looked at 100 different deals, you start to see trends, you start seeing things that are concerning, and you start seeing, you also kind of start developing your own appetite as to the type of deals that you want, because a good deal for you might not be a good deal for me, because we all have different needs. So I think that's a great point. Absolutely.
I think there's also, you know, all of these things take effort. And I talk to a lot of investors on the phone when they are interested in talking about potentially joining my fund. And, you know, a lot of them say like, okay, well, how do I know what's a good deal, or how much effort do I need to put in? And it's like, okay, well, if you think about it, you're about to take a huge lump sum of money, you know, 50, 100, maybe more, $1,000. And you're trying to deploy that money into something where you could lose it all, and there's this hesitation of like, oh, I don't have the time, or I don't want to invest into learning this skill. And I think I was there too, you know. I think when you get into anything new, it's like, oh, do I really have time? Do I really want to get into this? But it's actually just a new skill that you need to develop and learn. And one other point to something that you mentioned was, once you start getting on the phone more with a lot of these operators, you also understand who you like to work with. Who's short on the phone, or who will absolutely take the time and explain everything to you. Or, you know, I was on an investor call for a fund last week, and I asked where they got this information that they, what data source did they use for a bold claim they made? And then the sure. fund operator immediately told me, hey man, I don't think this investment's for you. Hmm. It's like, wow. You know, you learn a lot by just talking to some of these people and learning about who do you want to invest with?
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. Personalities come into play here. And when you get to a point where you're starting to accumulate some wealth, you do get to pick and choose who you want to be with. You're not just an Excel sheet or a person on an Excel sheet. You get to choose the personalities and the quality of the people that you invest with. And I think over time, that probably starts to weigh more heavily. And you're potentially even willing to sacrifice some returns for that investor experience as well. And I think it's important to also consider that you've got to be a good investor partner as well. So if you're the guy who asks 187 questions and then you place $25,000 and then you follow up six times a week on what's going on and how things are going, you might get more responses where, you know, they'd rather walk away than take your capital. So it's a balancing act early on, no doubt.
Yeah, no, I definitely resonate with that. And I definitely think you can go overboard. And I think, you know, if you're a newer investor to this space, it is a shift that you need to make. Unlike stocks, you do have access to the fund managers and CEOs often when you're investing in these funds. But also, you know, it's not that you can email them every week and ask them, you know, if they're a good operator, they will provide you updates on an ongoing basis. And you can sit there and ask questions, but to pepper over and over, it kind of means like you probably shouldn't have been placing your money in that fund. It was too sure. much of your sure. net worth for you to do that. What's your take on that?
No, I think that's a great point. And I think you're kind of dancing around a topic that is, you know, how much dollars do you put? And, you know, as a new investor coming in, do you take, if you've got 500 grand in investable capital, like, do you put that in 1, 2, 5, 20 different deals? What does that look like for you? Do you have certain strategies that or guidelines that you follow?
Yeah, I think there's the ideal approach and then there's how I've played it out in practice. So
two different things.
You know, I was just mentioning before this, my goal right now is to have less than 3% of my net worth with any one fund operator, because I think it's just a smart diversification play. Now, that is the goal. And I would say the way that I started, because I had to deploy money very quickly and to have it kind of start generating yield for, you know, to provide my mom some sort of income, right? So
sure.
the way I went about doing it, for better or for worse, was I did a lot of heavy diligence and found, you know, the one or two funds that I felt incredibly safe with. Mm-hmm. And I invested, you know, in bulk 500, 600, 800K. And then over time, you know, as I would find more operators to place money with, I pulled that money and moved it and diversified it. So, you know, could be, you know, some could see that as risky. I think it depends a lot on your situation and your goals and what you're trying to do. And for me, that just felt like the most appropriate path.
Well, and I think it's important to kind of highlight that point. You had to get the dollars deployed to create income and create or maintain lifestyle for your loved ones, right? So very different than potentially the high income W-2 person who is, you know, maybe they're getting annual bonuses or quarterly bonuses that they're deploying at some type of regular interval where you might have, you know, 90 days to 120 days to investigate your next investment. Now, you mentioned something that we've not gotten into a lot on this podcast, and I'd like to dig into it because you mentioned deploying capital into funds and then moving it. And a lot of times when people think about syndications or they think about alternative investments, passive investments, there is this illiquidity issue that comes into play. So it sounds like you might be leveraging some different tools than even what this subset of the population understands around alternative investing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So as I started getting into passive investing and thinking about, did I want to start a fund or help other people do this? I really started, once I invested in these different debt funds, such as the DLP Capital Lending Fund that we're both big fans of, you know, I came up with this concept of beginner, intermediate, and advanced level funds or private investments. So I think where most people go wrong and where most people start, unfortunately, is in the advanced bucket. You know, when you're younger or if you don't really know anything about private investing, most people, you know, they hear about some startup or company opportunity, which you deploy money and you're probably not going to see your money back for at least 10 years, if ever at all. So a lot of people, you know, including myself, have invested in startups, you know, in the advanced bucket before I had all this training at Techstars and, you know, of being able to see tons of deal flow, and then they get burned. And then they think, oh, you know what? Private investments, not for me.
Yep.
Then I think you have this intermediate bucket, which is what I consider, you know, maybe a more cash flow focused approach where you're investing money that you can't pull out or you can't pull out for 5 to 10 years, but within 2 or 3 years, people will start to see some cash flow or some sort of return. Okay. And, you know, if you're a newer investor, I think one of the big things that happen is you've decided you're going to make an investment, you wire the $50,000, and then you're sitting there 3 months later and you're asking yourself, okay, so when's the money going to flow in? Is this real? Have these people run away with my money? Like, you know, if you've never done it before, you don't know what to expect, and it's really weird. And so, you know, people will invest in as their first deal in these multifamily syndications. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. And if that's the route you want to go, by all means. But when I think about my investment journey, I wish that people started with showing me what I now call beginner funds, which are these funds like the DLP Capital Lending Fund, where they're more, you as an investor can invest in the deal and you get cash flow within the first 1 to 3 months, and you have the ability to pull your money out. So if it's your first time investing in a deal and something in private investments and you're ready to graduate, you've maybe tried Fundrise or Yield Street and you're ready to graduate, then putting your money in a fund where you get to actually see, oh, what's the communication like on a monthly basis from this operator? Do you know, are the checks actually rolling in?
right.
You know, and that's what I think has really helped me gain confidence in investing passively. And that's something, you know, I'm trying to educate or at least, you know, share with people that if you're going to get into the space, a way you can do that is by starting with beginner funds and then slowly graduating as you become more advanced and know how to do due diligence on different deals and operators.
I love it. I love it. It's honestly, I wish I had met you about 5 years ago because I did exactly what you said. I jumped right into, I would say, probably the higher intermediate where they, you know, there wasn't a lot of cash flow early on. Sure, I was getting something, but not enough to live on or anything like that. And now that I'm thinking back, I remember when I joined GoBundance, the resounding message was cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. And I remember when I was in the W-2, I was making very good W-2 income. So I didn't have a cash flow problem at all. In fact, I didn't even want it for tax reasons. I didn't want any additional income. But the second you get laid off from corporate America, all of a sudden you become a cash flow investor. And if you've got all of your money tied up in these intermediate type of funds, all of a sudden you're in a situation. So I think it's such a good point to look at immediately cash flowing options that have a liquidity kind of aspect to them. And then as you get more comfortable with those, you can pull portions out and start moving into the intermediate space. But such a good point that that really needs to be shared more and more, I think. Great stuff.
And to build off that point, it's like you don't really realize how illiquid the investment is until you need it.
Exactly.
Right? Your case that you were talking about where you get laid off and you think like, oh, maybe, you know, I have $1 million and that's, you know, I'm a wealthy person, but you feel poor all of a sudden.
Sure.
Because you don't have cash flow coming in and you need to figure out how to pay for your ongoing expenses somehow, you know?
Exactly. Such a good point. Well, let's see here. We've got so much more I want to cover here. So let's talk about some specifics if we can. I know you're in all kinds of different asset classes, but can you share maybe a few that maybe the traditional, you know, multifamily investor, maybe they haven't heard of and maybe why you chose those or pursued those?
Yeah. So I think the way I would start is by saying I have a barbell investing approach. So I very much have I think when you make an investment, there are three things that you can get out of that money. And I think that when you make an investment, you need to understand, what am I trying to get out of the money that I'm placing? Yeah. Am I trying to get cash flow? Am I trying to get equity growth? Meaning like, I want my money to grow as quickly as possible, or do I want some sort of tax benefits from it? There are some investments that do just one. You know, if you invest in the stock market, that's largely equity growth. You're trying to get your money to grow as quickly as possible. You could invest in these debt funds where you only get cash flow and they don't have any equity growth. And you could invest in just for tax credits, right? Like you can make investments and just buy tax credits. And then there are investments that have all three. And so, you know, like real estate, you get some rent, you get some appreciation, and you get depreciation with some tax benefits.
Yep.
And so I think it's important to figure out what you want out of your money. For me, I have two different buckets in this barbell approach. The one is I have money that's strictly focused on generating as much yield as possible that I can find safely. Okay. So my cash flow component. And then the other is this equity growth. I'm trying to get this money to grow as quickly as possible. And then I have a little bit in between. So,
okay.
You know, in terms of equity growth, the things that I'm in are pretty much largely like Tesla stock on the equities market. And then I'm in a crypto fund called Crypto Bull Capital. That's managed by my client, the guy I mentioned earlier on this call that I'd learned had way, way better returns than I did.
Okay.
And then in terms of on the front end, in terms of cash flow, you know, I'm in all different kinds of things. I've invested with Grant Cardone in an apartment building at 10X here, Miami. I've invested in Reliance Self-Storage Fund. I've been in the ATM investment that generates, you know, it's kind of like a more business-focused play. And I mean, you name it. I've been in commercial real estate deals. I'm in multiple different apartment syndications in Denver. So I have a large gamut of things. My focus has just been, how do I invest with someone who has an incredible track record through a down cycle?
Okay. So that's amazing. One, that you've identified that so succinctly as to your strategy. Very rarely do I run into folks that have that type of detailed plan. So clearly you've been taking lessons in the community that we're a part of and learning a lot there, I suspect.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I learned the concept of, I think what we're talking about here is an investment thesis from my role at Techstars. You know, when you have this big institutional $150 million fund, you need to have a a strategy on how you're going to approach finding startups and then which ones you're investing in. And so I feel like that really helped build that muscle of, okay, what is my investment thesis for this money? Oh, I think crypto is going to be worth a lot in the future. I don't need this money right now. I think it's the next financial system. And so that is my thesis. And then if I write that down, years later, I can come back and say, was I right? You know, all of it's an experiment. You need to think of it like an experiment. And you only learn if you know why you invested in the first place.
Okay. That makes a ton of sense. So yeah, I like how you've given some names to the strategies, you've given some visuals, some analogies with those. I like the barbell piece. You mentioned something earlier, you know, this advanced intermediate, and I'm not sure what the lower
beginner one was, intermediate advanced funds. Yeah,
exactly. Like, so I like the structure that you're applying to this, and it really gives kind of the new investor that's coming in, it gives them something to really attach to and associate and affiliate with. So that can help to direct some of their decisioning that they're going through. So, well, let's dig into what you're doing in the community today and your specific offering that you're solving one side of that dumbbell very specifically. And let's talk about what you and your group are going to be doing for the next year to 2 years plus. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think where I started is I realized that my dad had tried to invest in multiple different private investments. And I learned that many of them did not pan out due to many of the things that we're talking about and learning here today.
Okay.
And I realized how hard it was for someone like my dad, who I thought was a great investor, to do. And so, you know, then having to do that for my mom and really do the due diligence and figure out, okay, rule number one, how do I not lose any money? And then how do I make it generate real cash flow? And that's not easy, right? Like, if you're not in this world, then what other options do you have? Today, there are money markets that generate 5%, but that's not always the case and is actually just very new, right? And then probably won't stay forever. And then you have this, you could maybe invest in bonds. You could, you know, try and loan money out yourself, but you're not going to get anything at the bank. And you could maybe invest in dividend stocks or REITs, you know? And I didn't like the REIT approach because, you know, with volatility, the stock goes up and down. And I was struggling to find someone who focused on helping you diversify your cash flow sources and help them retire, right? And so I saw that need in the market. And, you know, that I'm basically building the resources that I wish existed a couple of years ago. So our focus is I'm looking for cash flowing funds that distribute cash flow within 12 months from an investment and that have been through a down cycle in the exact strategy I'm investing in. Those are kind of like my high level criteria.
Okay.
And when I think about some of the problems that I uncovered, you know, at the beginning, I think of myself as an investor first. You know, I am out here looking for deals and trying to scout them, and I'm putting my own money into the deals and I'm allowing people to invest alongside me in all of these cash flowing type funds. And so that's okay. Where my focus is, and that's how I'm helping people.
Okay. So now if an investor is intrigued with this beginning to intermediate stage and they wanted to connect with you to hear more about this, how would they find you?
Yeah. So they can reach out to me either info@pascalwagner.com. They can go on to GrowYourCashflow.io and join our email list, or follow me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, and you can follow along there and book a call directly from me there.
And you've got a pretty unique newsletter that you do. I believe it's a weekly newsletter where you're sending out, I mean, sometimes it's a dozen plus opportunities a week. So they can find that information or sign up for that on your newsletters or on your website.
Exactly.
As well.
So when you join the email list, part of it's education, helping you learn a lot of these concepts that we're talking about here that I've learned along the way that I wish someone, you know, taught me. And, you know, to go along with that, it's deal flow, you know, so I'm out here, I'm looking for deals, and I have a team, I have an assistant that kind of takes every single deal, plugs it into this database, and you can sort it by asset class. Is it a fund or syndication? You know, you can rank them by their returns. And so you can get access to all of that. All of the deals that I find, you can get access to if you join the list at growyourcashflow.io.
What an amazing service too. And it really goes back to kind of the first things we were talking about early on, is if you have access to one deal, that deal's either going to look really good or it's going to look really bad, and you don't have anything to compare it to. So this service gives you, I mean, there's literally hundreds of deals in that database, I believe. Right?
How do you go about finding deals? I mean, I think what's fascinating is I have not, there are platforms like the Yield Street and the Fundrise and the Realty Mogul. And the way sure. I think about it is that if you're a passive investor, you should be looking at all of these platforms. They're all part of your deal flow. But outside of that, and maybe, you know, clicking on some ads, that's, you know, I'm in different fund manager groups and masterminds, and that's how I collect a lot of my deals through my network. How do you do it?
Well, it's very similar. I raise my hand every opportunity I can get a new deal to come into my inbox. I want to take a look at it. And, you know, it's not necessarily because I'm going to invest in it, but I want to know what's going on in the marketplace. But I spend 60 hours a week doing this stuff. You know, this is not a couple hours on a weekend. So guys like you and I who see 50 to 100 deals a month, it just talks to the importance of an investor who connects with you, that feels comfortable, has that personality thing that we discussed earlier, and then really starting to become or starting to build a relationship with someone like you so they can start to trust your expertise and see the type of deals that you put in front of them. So I think,
I think likewise, right? So Rainey and I, we both do a similar thing where we help people get access to these real estate deals that they could not have otherwise, or by aggregating more capital, they can get better, you know, splits or better returns than you and just investing yourself. And I think part of, you know, if you're an investor listening to this call, the takeaway that I would want you to have from this conversation is that you should be finding the people, or quote unquote, the influencers that you resonate with, that you like their strategy, you like the way that they think, you know, you maybe do due diligence here on Randy and you understand how he evaluates deals and what he goes through before he recommends a deal, because then you can sit there and say, hey, I don't need to necessarily become an expert at looking at thousands of deals like Randy and I do every single week, but you can shortcut that by working with someone like Randy or myself. And not to say that that's, you know, you shouldn't be doing your own diligence on those types of deals that we both present, but it you know, everyone's looking for the hack. And I think that is the way to approach it.
And I think having somebody like yourself or myself be just one piece of your individual due diligence is, does it pass the Pascal Wagner check? And if it does, then it's something at least I want to take a look at, right? And right. I think that's really the value both you and I bring. And it's neat to hear that we have so much in common with an alignment on the type of operators that we like. So it just shows that the work we're doing is kind of leading to similar conclusions with a lot of the same operators that we know, like, and trust as well. So, well, I feel like, you know, I always try to keep these 30 minutes to 40 minutes, and inevitably here we are again. This has been a lot of fun, Pascal. I've enjoyed the time, enjoyed the conversation. I thought you've brought a ton of value to the group, but I'm not going to let you go just yet because I have a few questions that I do like to wrap up with everybody. Okay. All right. So this is the easy one, but you and I are both kind of whole life entrepreneurs, and we are trying to live big lives in all facets of our lives. So knowing that we're constant learners and educators, I suspect that you're a reader and you try to find new ideas and techniques from books. So are there some favorite books you'd care to share with us, or something recently you've put on the bookshelf that that really caught your attention?
Yeah, there are three books that come to mind. So I think if you are in the passive investing space, there is the Avoiding Rookie Errors as a Left Field Investor by Steve Suh. That one, you know, just it goes through, I think there's like 18 different errors or things that you should look out for. Okay. And it kind of offers practical advice and insights into common pitfalls in investment. Great read. You know, all from firsthand experience of Steve Suh and what he's learned along the way. That's the book I just finished last week, and definitely recommend that.
Okay.
There's another one called The Hands-Off Investor by Brian Burke.
Yep. Mentioned many times on this show. Yes.
Yeah. And then, it's fascinating to see how Justin has codified this into a book, but The Lifestyle Investor by Justin Donald really talks about this concept of stacking your investments over time. And mm-hmm. and I don't think he uses this verbiage, but I call it the velocity of capital. Like if you're investing in a longer term deal and you can get most of your principal back early in the life cycle of that deal, you can keep investing that principal and have it compound while you're still earning returns and have a position in your previous investments. So great concept, and definitely recommend that one too.
Love it. Yeah, no, I'm a big Justin Donald fan, and the first book you mentioned, I had not heard of that. So that is on my list now, and I will go find it. Okay, now kind of a fun one here. Do you have a recent bucket list item you've checked off your list, or one you're hoping to soon?
Yes. So if you know anything about me, you'll know that I love anything to do with yachts. Big yachts, small yachts, anything in between. So I'm a huge cruiser, and I had there were eight of us that went on a week-long cruise with Royal Caribbean for my birthday in October last year, which was I just think there's something special about, I think cruises are like all-inclusive resorts on the water.
Sure.
And you have everything taken care of for you. You don't need to think about where you're going to eat or, you know, what you're going to do. And so it allows you to have really solid bonding time with the Absolutely. People that you spend it with. So that was recent. And
where'd you go? Where'd the cruise go?
You know, I hate to say it, but so there were three destinations. I think it was Cozumel, Honduras, and somewhere in Mexico. But to me, it's not even about the destinations, at least in the Caribbean, because most of them are all the same. It's exactly. really just that you're on the water and you're hanging out with your friends.
I love it. I love it. Very cool.
Yeah.
Any future ones?
Future ones include, I really want to do Running with the Bulls in Pamplona, Spain.
Oh, yeah.
that's been on my bucket list for a while. As a German, I still haven't been to Oktoberfest. So
okay.
that's big on my list. And then the All third right. thing is the Zero G experience, which is like this plane on like a 787 that gives you the experience of weightlessness.
Yeah. Who is that? I was just listening to a podcast that he was talking about that, and he brought up, the gentleman I can't remember the guy's name, the old Superman. He brought him up to do that. That sounds amazing though. You actually have, I think it's like 40 seconds where you feel completely weightlessness. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I've had friends that have been on it and that are actually scientists and have run experiments on it. And so They've told me a ton, and it's definitely on my list. Short of going to space.
Yeah, you know, you talk to GoBundance guys about bucket list items, and you always hear something cool. So, yeah, it's that is a lot of fun, Pascal. And I think you and I are going to hang out more in the future, no doubt. So, yeah. Very cool. All right, and then this is a new question that I just asked, so we're catching you off guard here. But if you were given $100,000 today, and you had to place it, and you couldn't put it in one of your own deals, where would you place that capital?
So this is the question where I would go back to what I said earlier in the episode is like, you need to understand what is it that you're trying to do with the money, right? So I think on the equity side, if I was trying to just grow it, you know, as quickly as possible, I would definitely stick it in the Cryptable Capital Fund.
Okay.
If it was a tax play, I'd probably do something like the ATM investment. And if it was a strict cash flow play, the DLP fund is, I'd probably stick it in some sort of high yielding debt fund. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I happen to know a couple of guys that do just that. So yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very good, Pascal. This has been just a ton of fun, and it's neat to kind of compare notes with somebody that's doing something similar to me. And gosh, I feel like I learned a ton, so I'm sure the audience did as well. But yeah, thanks so much for being on the show. And any final comments you'd care to share with the audience before we wrap up?
Yeah, no, I just appreciate you having me on, Randy. This has been a ton of fun. And for all those that don't know, I've actually been talking to Randy quite a bit, and I view Randy as a mentor for myself. So I'm happy to have had this opportunity to connect with Randy. And again, if you'd just like to learn more about me and join my email list, you can just go to growyourcashflow.io and we can start a conversation there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, very good. And to the audience, as always, thank you so much for joining today. It's been a fun experience today. We've all learned a lot. Our advice, as always, is continue that education process. But more importantly than the education, make the decision to invest in that first passive investment deal. Both Pascal and I are convinced once you do, you'll just wish you had started much, much sooner, and you'll be one step closer to decreasing your dependence on your W-2. So join us again next Thursday for another great episode. And thank you again for joining us today.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.